getting a view into the locker room that you don't normally see.
A sanitized view.
Not a natural scorer.
The honest opinion, he's not doing the job that they hired him to do.
I just disagree.
Accelerating your hockey learning curve. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. For all those joining us live this morning at TSN1290.ca, good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of hockey talk for you on this Saturday morning. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by Ezra Ginsberg and Richard Pollock. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can reach us in studio via at Illegal Curve if you have anything on your mind, if you need something off your chest. You can do it via Twitter. We're on Facebook, facebook.com/illegalcurve. Same feed for Instagram, where you have some great photos from all of the Winnipeg Jets home games featuring our professional photography. So check that out on our Instagram feed for some behind-the-scenes shot. Not so much behind-the-scenes, but some great photography from the Winnipeg Jets games. And, of course, our website, illegalcurve.com. It's got all the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news. I say good morning to my colleagues, Richard, Ezra. Gentlemen, good to see you both. Ezra, you're looking resplendent in an orange T-shirt, I must say.
Well, I'm trying to match the weather. Like, the weather outside right now is unbelievable. I mean, we're certainly going to hit up a patio after the show. I don't know about you guys, but I am. And, you know, I'm feeling good.
The patio might not be open. He's just going to be standing outside.
There's a few patios open. I saw Earl's Main was open, and BDI is open well today. So I'm definitely going to be hitting those up. And
now you're talking my language there.
I'm feeling very rejuvenated, and you know, I feel wide awake. I don't know about Richie, though. Richie did pre and post Thursday, and then he was on the big show Friday morning.
Hardest working man.
This guy's on the radio all the time.
Hardest working man in show business.
Morning, boys.
Good morning. See, a little tired. You can hear it in the voice. You know?
Sleepy. He's got a little shut-eye. Cobwebs.
Not nearly as resplendent as you are in that orange shirt there, I must say, though. But you're looking okay there, Rich.
Thank you, Drew.
You're welcome.
I woke up and decided to read the arbitration ruling, which put me back to sleep.
We will, of course, get to that decision by the arbitrator to reduce Dennis Wiedemann's suspension, to cut it in half a little later on in the program.
How can your suspension be reduced to 10 games when you've already served 19 games?
Well, you get the money back is really what it boils down to, which is, I think, what Dennis Wiedemann probably wanted more than anything at that point in time.
The answer is always money.
The answer is always money. That's a very true point of view, Ezzy. The Winnipeg Jets won't be getting any playoff money this year, as of course we know and have known for a number of weeks that the season is a battle to the basement and a better draft lottery spot. This week, same outcome, three games since we were last on air, I guess four games technically, since last Saturday. They won one against Montreal last Saturday. They've lost their last three to the Oilers on Sunday, then against the Predators on Tuesday and the Red Wings on Thursday. You know, I'll give them credit, though. I mean, the results aren't there, and whether or not you think that's a good thing or not, I don't want to get into because we've had the conversation ad nauseum. But I thought they played hard on Thursday, certainly. Tuesday, Nashville was the better of the two teams. But on Thursday, I thought it was a toss-up game. You know, after 40 minutes, it could have gone either way. Jets had that early 2-0 lead, but just weren't able to finish in the end, and the Red Wings get the win in regulation, and the Jets move to second last place in the NHL standings.
Yeah, and I know the fans are excited about that. In terms of Thursday's game, I thought Detroit was a better team, Drew, but Jets had a chance to win. You know, Blake Wheeler ringing a shot off the crossbar, just with about a minute left or even less than a minute. They had a chance. They're playing hard. They just don't have the talent. And so fans are excited that they're only 4 points behind or above, whatever way you want to look at it, the Maple Leafs for the best odds at the draft lottery. And so it makes these last, you know, these last 15 games interesting. I mean, from that sense, it's hard to watch some of the stuff. I mean, the roster they're putting out there is not the roster you're going to see game one next season. You're going to see a different roster just by the fact of all the injuries that they've faced down the stretch here. And I'm sure they're being extra cautious, shutting guys down, ensuring that the guys are fully healthy. If they were in a playoff race, Ezzy, I'm sure you'd see some of these guys right now. But they want to make sure that these guys are ready to roll and good for the playoffs, good for the offseason. So, and I understand that. I mean, you really do not have anything to play for. What Paul Maurice is trying to do now what you'd think or you'd hope Paul Maurice is trying to do, and I know you want to get into this, Drew, in a bit, is see a little bit more of those guys on the bottom end of the roster, on the active roster. And maybe, and Rick and I were discussing this on Thursday, maybe by not playing a lot of these guys, you're already seeing what his view is of them. So,
yeah, and guys, even though the Jets are out of the playoffs here, and they know they're out of the playoffs, you're playing teams that are fighting for their playoff lives.
Sure.
So you're playing a Detroit Red Wings team that has the Philadelphia Flyers that are creeping up on them. Mm-hmm. You're playing the Colorado Avalanche, who are fighting with the Minnesota Wild for the last wild card spot in the Western Conference. Sure, you've got some games coming up against the Canucks and the Flames, two teams that are both out of the playoffs. They know they're out of the playoffs, but you're going to see some exciting games. So I know that it's been tough for some fans, especially season ticket holders, mm-hmm. who are going to watch a team that is basically hoping that they finish lower so they have a higher draft pick. I mean, if you look at it right now, and TSN has the NHL draft simulator up there, the Jets have a 13.5% chance of getting the first overall pick right now. And that is probably the light at the end of the tunnel for this year. I mean,
sure.
And you never really want to finish that low in the standings. But if you're going to miss the playoffs, you might as well get a higher draft pick, right?
For sure.
We're at that point in the season, we can say that. I think when people were talking about that back in January, that was ridiculous. I mean, back in January, the Jets still thought they had a good chance. Even in early February, the Jets thought they had a good chance. They weren't mathematically eliminated. Then as you got closer to the trade deadline, the Jets were 12 points, 14 points out of it. I mean, it's safe to say that at this point, as Richie said, it's all about next year. So guys like Scott Kosmachuk, J.C. Lapon, I'd throw Marco Dano and Joel Armia in there. They're trying to impress the coaching staff because those spots are not guaranteed for any of those players. I mean, I would argue that probably Marco Dano you'd expect to be among the top nine forwards next year just because they have so much invested in him at this point. He was traded for Andrew Ladd. But even Marco Dano played in the minors when he was traded to Chicago. So guys like that are really trying to impress the coaches. And, you know, good on a guy like Dano, gets his first goal as a Jet. I thought he played really well against Detroit. And I agree with you, Drew. I think the Jets are still going out there and competing. But to Richie's point, no Brian Little, no Nikolai Ehlers, Andrew Ladd's been traded. I mean, those are three of your top six forwards for most of the season, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, at this point in the season, you're going to go out there, and these guys are professionals. They're going to go out and try to win. Look at Edmonton right now. Well, everybody who thinks that this notion of tanking, and I've been pretty vocal on Twitter about this, tanking is not synonymous with losing.
Can you be vocal on something where people don't actually hear your voice?
I guess vocal in the written sense.
I know.
And you can't expect your team just to go out there, and tanking is losing on purpose. And the Jets are never going to go out and lose on purpose.
But, okay, so there's a distinction, right? The players don't lose on purpose, but the teams are trying. Like, the Toronto Maple Leafs are trying to lose on purpose. Like, that is
organizationally.
That's organizationally. Buffalo Sabres organizationally traded for Evander Kane last year when he was not going to play a game. Like, I mean, that was, to me, part of the plan, not only to acquire a player and Bogosian, but to be terrible to try and get your best odds for Connor McDavid. So I agree with you that I don't think that tanking, these players don't tank. And none of these the Oilers don't tank, the players don't tank. Now, this is a difference, and I think there needs to be a distinction there. The Toronto Maple Leafs wanted to be terrible this year. Every move they made is to be the worst team in the league.
I was talking more about the Jets, not the Leafs.
Yeah, no, exactly. So I just want to touch on that.
Yeah.
The Edmonton Oilers weren't trying to be as bad as they've been in these past five, six, 7 years. The Winnipeg Jets were not trying to be this bad.
Well,
they're going to be the benefactors of a plan that wasn't successfully executed. Whereas the Leafs, frankly, may be a benefactor of a plan that was successfully executed. And I think there is a distinction there that needs to be made.
Yes.
Well, Paul Maurice, I thought the most interesting news of the week regarding the Winnipeg Jets was in Paul Maurice's scrum on Wednesday, before the team went to Detroit for the Thursday game, where he was asked some pointed questions about, you know, what he expected when he signed here as coach a number of years ago at this point in time. You know, he made his comments about, quote-unquote, sophisticated fans. So, you know, here's Paul Maurice about what he thought when he signed here, what he expected of the team when he signed here.
Yeah, it's pretty, I mean, it would be fairly close to exactly what Kevin had said in our very first conversation. We're going to identify what we have, and there's a real possibility that we're going to have to get to be a young team to develop that core.
Do you believe that they thought that, you know, under any circumstances that they had to tear this thing down?
No, I think they probably made a conscious decision this offseason. I don't know if it was financially motivated or not, probably partially, to go younger. I don't think that is that means a tear down, Drew. So that's what the question is. But I do think that they very possibly thought there may be a slight step back to take two steps forward. I don't think the step back that they thought this year would be what is it, 59 points. I'm just going to get the exact number here. 59 points in 67 games, winning 27 games. And I don't think that was in the game plan whatsoever.
But of course, teams are going to allow the possibility to fall back, especially in the Western Conference, especially in the Central Division. 2 years ago, Colorado won the division. Last year, they missed the playoffs. 2 years ago, Dallas made the playoffs. The next year, they missed the playoffs. Those were two really good teams. So why wouldn't the Winnipeg Jets also factor that in? I mean, to Richie's point, I don't think they said at the beginning of the year, you know what, there's not a really good chance we're going to make the playoffs, so we're probably not going to sign Andrew Ladd. We'll probably trade him for a prospect in a first rounder.
Right. They tried to sign him.
Tried to sign him. So
I think they're trying to sell a bit of a bill of goods that this was all the plan all along, that the team would be this bad this year, and you know, well, we knew we had to get younger, and
if he was saying that though. Like, I think he was trying to spin it. Pomerantz is
good at spinning.
He certainly could be running in the provincial campaign here. He's a good politician, but I don't know if he was saying that the plan was to be awful and that was kind of part of the plan. Like, they didn't foresee being this bad. And, I mean, I don't think anybody really can argue that.
And when you factor in some injuries, like, if the Jets were 4 or 5 points out of the playoffs 3 weeks ago and Brian Little goes down, we would be talking a lot more about this, guys. Like, going down basically eliminated any chance the Jets had at kind of pulling off a Philadelphia Flyers-like comeback run, right? That's your number one center. Then you throw in Nikolaj Ehlers. I mean, again, you don't want to use injuries as excuses, but the point is, these things would have been much more of a factor if the Jets were still in it.
If the Jets were still in it, as I made the point earlier about guys, you'd see guys coming back. So I don't know if it's Armia's significant injury or not. But my point was more not that Little can play with this injury.
Right.
My point was that Hellebuck would be playing if they thought they had a legitimate chance. They're hacking him down there for his quote-unquote development, really to see what they have in Hutchinson, to get an idea, and to not have to subject him to waivers. So, I mean, it's not winning isn't that main priority, because the rationale of sending him down because you don't want him to split time up top makes no sense because he's splitting time with Comrie. Okay. So, I mean, there's those things you know. And I'm not saying that decision in the context of where you are at the time, even though it was unexpected, is the wrong decision.
Sure.
I'm just saying,
it was a decision with that was made with the future and evaluating your current talent in mind, not looking to put your best lineup forward on a night in, night out basis.
It's my opinion.
And guys, I think another team that you could compare to the Winnipeg Jets this year, pardon me, ask Jarmo Kekalainen and John Davidson if this is how they saw this season going.
Sure.
I mean,
sure.
Most people predicted that the Columbus Blue Jackets would win the playoffs. Everybody who listens to this show knows that I picked Todd Richards to win Coach of the Year, and I was wrong. I'll admit I was wrong.
Yeah, I don't know. Everybody
I mean,
gets
I'd
wrong
like to
on
think
show.
Sometimes I'm right, but most of the time I'm wrong. But the Columbus Blue Jackets are, you know, what are they, fourth last, fifth last in the NHL right now? I mean, they've been competitive. Tortorella's got some wins out of that team
over the last
couple of weeks. So, I mean, they're going to get a high draft pick. But that team, after having a disappointing season last season, they expected to be back in it. That's why they went out and they acquired a Brandon Saad.
Sure,
so, I mean, you plan to make the playoffs, but you know that if you're not one of those elite teams like a Chicago or a Washington, you know there's always a chance that things can go off the rails, right? So, I mean, it's been a tough season for the Jets. And at this point, with all of the injuries, you're looking at getting a high draft pick, whether that's second overall, fourth overall, whatever. But the point is, there's no real reason to pick up points here at the end of the season. You're not making it.
They're in a tough division, of course. I mean, people know they're in a tough division. I think they're probably frustrated. Like, tonight's game, to me, would lead to frustration. And why? Because I don't think many in the Jets brass think Colorado's much better than them, if at all.
And Colorado's owned the Jets this year.
And Colorado's 74 points. The Jets are 59. And you mentioned that they've owned them. Like, that, to me, would be something that Kevin Cheveldayoff will sit in that corner box.
And he'll stew it about.
And he'll think, yeah, we're arguably, like, certainly if everybody's healthy, we're probably better than this team.
At the beginning of the year, sure.
Certainly just as good. So to see that situation, it's probably very frustrating for him. Chicago's different. I mean, those teams are different.
What did you think, and I'll play him first, but you know, your thoughts about Paul Maurice. Here's Paul Maurice talking about the sophisticated and the unsophisticated Winnipeg Jets fans vis-a-vis understanding why they're going through this rebuild, for lack of a better word.
I think our fans are quite a bit more sophisticated than maybe you give them credit for.
What do you think about those comments? They left me with a sour taste in my mouth when I heard them.
Okay, well, how do you interpret them? Let's start with that.
Well, I think he's saying that the I think he's saying that the fans understand the need for why they're going through this sort of rebuild this year. And I don't think fans or fans who don't understand that need are unsophisticated in their hockey knowledge.
I don't know if I'd think that, Drew. I would basically take from that we haven't heard the whole clip.
I mean, we can play it later if we want. But
yeah, maybe that might be a good idea. But why don't we do this? Why don't we go to break?
Okay.
Why don't we come back and play that whole scrum just to make sure the context is...
Sure. We'll play the entire two-minute Paul Maurice scrum from last Wednesday, and we'll talk about that. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Illegal Curve is thrilled to be participating in the Riverview Health Center Foundation Cycle on Life. Join IC on June the 5th in raising money for the Riverview Health Center's Alzheimer's and Dementia Awards by cycling in the event or contributing to Team Illegal Curve. For more information about the Riverview Health Center Foundation Cycle on Life or to join Team Illegal Curve, visit rhcf.mb.ca. If you want to join Team Illegal Curve, send us a tweet at Illegal Curve. We'll give you all the relevant information.
Definitely join up with Illegal Curve. I have a beef with both of you. During the break, both of you were shushing me.
Yeah, well, you talk too much sometimes when work needs to be done.
No, you were trying to talk to Eric. You were trying to get it. You're distracting me. He's trying to pull up a clip.
Yeah, for this segment, you're talking about something like 3 hours from now.
Eric is one thing. I can understand Eric shushing me. I mean, he doesn't have be...
Eric was too nice to shush you, so Richard and I had to shush you on Eric's behalf.
You usually shush me, Drew,
exactly,
but I'm asking Richie during the break where he went for lunch, where he went for dinner last night, and he's saying, hold on, we're coming back. We had like a minute to go before the break ended.
I'm on Team Richard on this one here. Anti-Ezzy is my new policy.
I guess we just don't have casual chit-chat during the breaks anymore.
Here's Paul Maurice, his entire scrum from Wednesday, where there was a good back and forth between him and Paul Friesen of the Winnipeg Sun, you know, talking about this year, talking about the future of this team. Here's Wednesday's scrum between Paul Maurice and Paul Friesen.
What are you signed here long-term, Paul? Is this the plan you envisioned? Is it going kind of the way you thought it would go?
Yeah, it's pretty... I mean, it would be fairly close to exactly what Kevin had said in our very first conversation. We're going to identify what we have, and there's a real possibility that we're going to have to get to be a young team to develop that core.
Was there a slight change, though, heading into this season, instead of plugging with some veteran guys to maybe try to stay a playoff team or
not? Not in terms of a change of the original plan, no. I mean... We had to develop a core here of players that can drive the team for quite a while, and we've got some good young players that have come in and done that. There's some growing pains that go through that. I'd be quite honest with you, it's probably going to continue.
Those growing pains for you too? I mean, coaches want to win as much as anyone.
Sure, so you don't enjoy losing hockey games, and it can set in and bother you, but you have an opportunity here with some good young players to develop a game that you can play and win with. So that's the focus now. I mean,
when fans have a hard time being patient, seeing that rosy future that I guess you guys see, what do you say to them?
I think our fans are quite a bit more sophisticated than maybe you give them credit for. And then I guess it's our job to be right. Right? It's our job to take that strong belief and conviction of the direction that we're going, and Kevin has that, and Mark has that. And I certainly believe in the group that's coming in and the group that's here now that it is the right direction. We need a strong core developed. We have players to do that. They're early on in that development.
When do you see it being a playoff team again?
As soon as we make it. You know, it's...
Next year reasonable?
Wouldn't be very many teams, and there's a handful of them, that can stand here and say it with certainty. Because you can win the Stanley Cup and miss the playoffs. And we're moving toward it. I mean, the more young drivers, the closer we get to the core driving the team, the younger players, the closer we'll get to it.
That's Paul Maurice in a scrum on Wednesday prior to the game against the Detroit Red Wings that they flew out to Wednesday evening. They played Thursday in Detroit, of course. Having heard full context, mm-hmm. you hear the entire dialogue, the back and forth. Now, you know, does that change your thoughts from the last segment? What are your thoughts on what the answers Paul Maurice provided there?
You know, Dre, I think with the sophisticated part, yeah, I mean, it comes off as a little bit more...
condescending?
Yeah, it's a little bit condescending. We know more than you kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Maybe two from Paul to Paul. I'm not sure if he's insinuating that a high draft pick this year benefits the team in the long run, or trust us, it'll be okay. I'm not sure what the insinuation is there. Overall, I mean, obviously there's some tough questions that he has to answer, and it's tough for him to answer some of those. Paul Friesen's able to ask whatever he likes, and I don't have an issue with somebody asking hard questions, which, you know, you can see Paul Maurice pausing and trying to think of the answer that he wanted to use, which he's more than entitled to as well. I don't think the idea of the developing the young core, I don't think that has to be done without having, like, for example, if you wanted to add some veteran forwards this year, I don't think that gets in the way of developing a young core. So I just want to put that out there. I don't think that you could sign two veteran forwards this year, have some young guys play down in the A, and I don't think that gets in the way of developing Mark Scheifele or Jacob Trouba or Adam Lowry. Even though Adam Lowry was thrown down to the A this year. You know what I mean?
Sure.
So I don't agree with that rationale. I'll put it that way, and I think that's a reach, frankly. But... And I don't think this year, again, I don't think this was, and for Paul Maurice to say this was the plans going, I mean, just be honest. This has been a disappointing year. You made the playoffs last year. You gave Anaheim a good run, even though you lost in four games. And you made a real good run down the stretch. And the team has played differently. There's been a different environment and a different style of play. And there's been changes, and you expected to do more. I mean, that's really the honest answer. But don't say this was part of the plan. I mean, that is just that's not the case, guys. We know this is not the case.
And Richie, you could hear the frustration in Paul Maurice's voice. And I think that interview, listening to it, and Paul Friesen is a great journalist. We know him. We see him all the time at the Jets games. His questions were passive, and
Paul won't say they were passive.
Well,
Paul Friesen's a lot of things, as he passive's not one of them. Well,
passive, maybe passive aggressive. I would say
I think they were just
point journalists.
I think when he was, well, hey, I'm the only one with the journalism degree
absolutely.
Here. I know what questions are. I think Paul Maurice was being cryptic a little bit. And as far as saying that fans are sophisticated, again, you don't want to, you know, dissect too much of his answers here. But I think that, you know, he's saying that they're not as disappointed. I mean, he's saying, was that the plan here? Well, he's basically saying, well, was the plan to lose with young players? That's what he's asking.
That's
right?
That's a fair point, I think.
And you know, he didn't say it like that. That's what I meant by kind of mm-hmm. passive-aggressive. He
sure.
was asking it in a different way, and you kind of have to ask questions in a different way to get the answers that you want, right? But I think that Paul Maurice or Kevin Cheveldayoff or any of the Jets are never going to, management, I should say, are never going to admit that the plan has kind of gone a different direction. But I think, to Richie's point, why not admit that the plan has gone south, right? I mean, the plan this year was to make the playoffs. I don't care what anybody says. I mean, the Jets did not plan to finish second last, third last, whatever.
Sure.
Their goal at the beginning of the season was to make the playoffs, and they said all along, this is what the Jets have said, their plan all along was to sign both Ladd and Byfuglien. That's what they said. That's not what I'm saying. And they
or
were
their
unable,
hope or, you know, their hope or their
right,
plan, whatever.
Right.
Sure.
They never came out and said they didn't want to sign Andrew Ladd, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we have to go by what the Jets are telling us. Everything else is speculation and conjecture, guys. And I mean, it's good for us in the media here, but, you know, Andrew Ladd, let's be honest, he was asking for too much money. The Jets didn't want to pay him what he was asking for.
Well, the Jets determined that he wasn't that they didn't want to pay him what he was asking
right.
for.
But whatever reason, they couldn't come to a contract. And you're not going to sign a guy like Andrew Ladd if you're not trying to make the playoffs early in the season, midway through
right.
the season, all that. So, you know, this kind of notion, of course the fans in Winnipeg are sophisticated. We have the best hockey fans in the world, in my opinion. I mean, we've always had good hockey fans,
mm-hmm.
even when the NHL left in 1996,
mm-hmm.
supporting the World Juniors in 99, the Manitoba Moose, supporting the Manitoba Moose. I mean, we've got that history of junior hockey as well as professional hockey in the city going back to the WHA days. I mean,
sure.
of course the fans are sophisticated, and a lot of fans want the Jets to get a higher draft pick, and
mm-hmm.
I can understand that. I mean, when you're such a bad team, the Jets are second worst in the NHL right now. We've said that repeatedly here. there's not a lot to look forward to in the last 15 games of the year, 14 games, I guess, now. Mm-hmm. And the fact that you could get an Austin Matthews or you could get a, you know, a Matthew Tkachuk, I mean, that's something to look forward to. But, you know, as far as I can see...
But in the middle of October, I mean, fans weren't thinking that they were going to be in the running for a top draft pick. Fans thought that they might be building on a playoff spot.
Sure. It appears that the fans would appreciate him. I don't want to speak for all the fans, but it's just a little bit more transparency, a little bit more honesty.
Sure.
We didn't expect this to be the season that it is. We're using this year now to develop a lot of young players, maybe earlier than we anticipated, and we're going to try and build on this, and there'll be a high draft pick here. Mm-hmm. We want to add to the stable, and we're going to keep working hard. And next year, we're hoping that we bounce back. A lot of the numbers here indicate that we aren't as bad as our performance. And that's what you're asking for, just honesty, as opposed to the spin machine. That's all you're saying, really.
And I mean, if you want to talk about sophisticated fans, if they come out and say that, I think the fans are completely sophisticated enough to understand that.
I think they already know it. They just like to hear it.
Yeah, well, just stop telling me it's raining when it's a bright sunny day, or stop telling me it's a sunny day when it's raining. I can appreciate rain. I can deal with it. I can live with it.
So I just think it's just a little bit more honesty is what they're asking for. If they aren't told that by the coach, for example, or the GM, I still think the fans know it for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
I just think sometimes you want the connection of hearing it. You know, I think to some coaches, I don't think this speaks to Paul Maurice's coaching ability, these conversations. And you don't know what Paul Maurice thinks in terms of decisions made in the offseason to the roster, right? He's not the GM. But the idea is you think probably there's a few coaches out there who'd be a little bit more direct about what's occurred. And I think this market prefers or maybe deserves somebody a little bit more for somebody to be a little bit more direct and honest about what's happened this year or in years past. I just think if you think the fans are sophisticated, then talk to them in a sophisticated manner.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we're going to bring in Winnipeg Jets 1.0 member Luciano Borsato. We're going to start talking about the Heritage Classic. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290.
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Shortly after 9:30 in the morning, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Richard Pollock, Ezra Ginsberg with you. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We are pleased to welcome to the program Luciano Borsato. As hockey fans here in Winnipeg well know, he was a member of the Winnipeg Jets 1.0, playing 4 full seasons here in Winnipeg. Luciano, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Morning, guys. Thanks for having me.
Our pleasure. How are you doing?
Pretty good.
That's good. Obviously, we brought you on. You know, we're doing a lot of talk this week here in Winnipeg, sort of looking back at the Winnipeg Jets 1.0 with the announcement of the Heritage Classic going to be played here this coming October, where you'll see the alumni game featuring some of your former colleagues. Dale Howarchuk, of course, going to be the captain of Team Winnipeg Jets 1.0. You know, did you pay any attention to the announcement of the Heritage Classic from earlier in the week?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It was all over the place. My friends would ask me about it, and it's pretty exciting time. It's great. It's great for Winnipeg to have the game.
Have you heard anything from the Jets organization?
No, I have not. But I think everybody, all the guys, are open to do anything. You know, I know not everybody can play, but just maybe participating in the weekend in some capacity, that would be fantastic.
Sure. You know, going back to the 1.0 era, who are you still in touch with from the teams back then? You played for the Jets, you started your had your NHL debut in 90-91, but the bulk of your years playing in the NHL 91 through 94. And, any guys in particular that you're still in touch with from those teams?
I still play hockey once a week, and Chris King, Darren Shannon, Mark Osborne, a few of the guys we play regularly. It's in a few other former pros play, and it's pretty fun. We just play 3-on-3 hockey, smaller rinks, so it's easier for the old guys.
Does Chris King still have the leather straps on his helmet?
No. He has access to better equipment now, I think.
Yeah.
Luciano, going back, Drew mentioned, that year that you had your breakout year was 92-93, and just wanted to ask you what it was like, to play with that many great rookies. Timu Solani scoring 76 goals, but there was also Alexei Zamenhof, who had his rookie year that year, Evgeny Davidov. What was it like to be on that team with so many great young offensive forwards?
Well, it was pretty fun. That's when, I remember when Alex came over, you just watch him and, wow, this guy is unbelievable. Timo, obviously everybody knows the record of 76 goals. That was pretty amazing just to be on the sidelines watching him. All the guys, a lot of talented players, It was pretty exciting.
Do you remember, Luciano, you're playing a few games with the big club, and that, I guess, the year that people thought the Jets would leave and eventually they stayed an extra year. Do you remember kind of the feeling of maybe uneasiness in terms of what was happening with the franchise?
Yeah, I played the year before. I left the year before the last year. And, yeah, you can feel it, with the league. Everything was changing at the time. It was a different time with the salary disclosure and people leaving, talking about Timo getting traded and stuff like that. And it was just, obviously, you don't want any Canadian teams to leave being Canadian or even being part of the history of the league and the way that Winnipeg came over. So, yeah, there was tension. But you just didn't really, I think a lot of time you just try to play, right? You can't really worry about that stuff. You just play and do the best you can and hope everything works out.
Did you expect the team, when you played in 95, did you, and then they eventually left in 96, did you expect them to ever return?
I only thought they would ever return if somebody relocated. I didn't think they'd get an expansion team. And I remember talking to a few people. I just didn't think it was happening. But the way that the Chipman and the Thompson family, the way they did it, I think was very, professional. They were always under the radar. And they did it silently, kind of, and they put up a good, a franchise with the Moose, and I think that's the reason why they were able to get the team. Obviously Atlanta, that was unfortunate for Atlanta, but still, it was just a great story. Like the build up to getting the team was pretty exciting too. You guys know that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. and then some. You're absolutely right. Yeah. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Our guest is Luciano Borsato. He, of course, a member of the Winnipeg Jets 1.0 version, talking about the Heritage Classic. Luciano, we played the clip off the top of the interview. I'm not sure if you were able to hear it, but going back, it was April 23rd, 1993. You score a shorthanded goal in leading the Jets to a Game 3 victory over the Vancouver Canucks. What do you remember about that goal? And where does that rank among your career highlights?
Well, I do remember because I have people sending me that stuff, and I see it on YouTube and things like that. It was pretty exciting. It was just a fluky bounce off of, I think, Thomas's back or somebody's back, and I just took off. When you get a breakaway in hockey from the blue line, it's very rare. All of us, our eyes light up. Like I'm sure you guys play now, your eyes light up, and it was kind of a blur, but I just remember the excitement in the rink. It was just electrifying, the whiteout. It was fantastic. And I also remember Darren Shannon said, years later, he would say, I was the happiest guy in the rink because he was in the penalty box. So I said he was pretty happy. So it was just, that was a great time. That whole series, I thought we played really well. Obviously Vancouver was one of the top teams in the league, but we battled, and I thought that's where we had a good future moving forward.
Luciano, you mentioned that you stay in touch with some ex-Winnipeg Jets and play hockey with guys like Darren Shannon and Chris King. What about the Jets 2.0? How often are you watching the Jets 2.0, and do you see some parallels between this year's team and that young team that you played on in 92-93?
Well, I do try to pay attention. When I play soccer on a regular basis, and the guys always, we talk about it, and I do try to pay attention. And last year, when they made the playoffs, I went to the first game in a pub with with about five guys from Winnipeg that I've gotten over the years. And there were half the bar was Winnipeg fans. They had their Jets jerseys on. So I try to pay attention. It's pretty exciting for the city, right? The team, they got Scheifele, they got some good young players. This year obviously is not it didn't turn out the way they wanted to. But hopefully, you know, this is just a blimp in the progress, and next year will be another step forward.
Luciano, do I have this right? And we interviewed him, it was a year or two ago. Did you play for Bob Murdoch on three separate occasions, the Jets, Cologne, and then Nuremberg?
Yeah.
Give us the best Bob Murdoch story. Be honest. Well,
I don't know if I can tell them.
maybe the radio edit version of the best Bob Murdoch story.
If there's more than one, we love to hear it.
I'll tell you off the air. He was pretty good, you know. I got to play with him just my first NHL game in 91 in Calgary. And then I went to Cologne with him, and then I finished my career in Nuremberg. You know what? He was always good. He was always good to me. He knew, you know, we kind of knew each other, and he didn't have to tell me anything. I just did what I knew I was supposed to do. So we had a good relationship. We still, you know, I talked to him a few months ago. You know, we still keep in touch, and we've seen him throughout the years. So that's been nice.
Is there somebody, Luciano, you know, these Heritage Classics do, obviously, the alumni game. The alumni game really is getting more attention than the actual the Sunday game. But is there somebody, and there's going to be some kind of festivities, of course, on that Saturday around the alumni game. Is there somebody you'd like to see the team honor from the past, maybe most of all?
I don't know. There are so many players, and you know, with the WHA team, and then there are a lot of good players, and I don't really know about that. You know, I did happen to see that when Howard Chuck was honored, was honored in Buffalo, a few years ago, I happened to go to that game, and that was pretty exciting. I'm not sure what they're planning to do. I know that, you know, it was kind of tough to when the team, you know, changed and they wanted to do a different name, and the fans kind of wanted to keep the Jets name. I think that was a lot of confusion with the franchise, you know, the different franchises, and I'm not sure. I'm sure they'll put on a great show.
Now, Luciano, you mentioned that you've been following the announcement of the Jets Oilers alumni game, and I think people got really excited, especially when Gretz and Temu announced that they were going to be participating. Are you always surprised at or maybe you're not surprised because yourself, you mentioned you still follow the Jets, but when Temu always mentions Winnipeg, and it seems like he's tweeting or Instagramming about his time in Winnipeg constantly, even though he was here for 2.5 years, did that make you more excited and make you want to play more in this alumni game?
Well, you know what? Obviously, when you know Dale Hawerchuk and Timo Solani say things about Winnipeg positively, it just brings it out. It just makes more people aware, you know, of how it was such a great time playing there. And it's great. It's funny when you look back. Timo only played, you know, you said 3 years, 2.5 years, 3 years, and I think it's a great thing that he's participating. You know, if a lot of guys weren't interested, I think obviously you wouldn't have the buildup that you had, the excitement you have now. So it is pretty exciting when you see the list, even for me, like for any fan, you see, you know, all the Oilers guys and the Jets guys. It's pretty exciting to watch that game.
Luciano Borsato is a former member of the Winnipeg Jets version 1.0. He joins us on the line from Toronto. Luciano, appreciate your time this morning. Hopefully, you know, we'll see you back here in Winnipeg if, you know, for the alumni game, for the festivities, whatever it is, you know, we'll hopefully see you back here in Winnipeg coming up soon.
Thanks, guys. Have a good day.
You too. Take care. Thanks very much.
Thanks very much, Luciano.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll talk about the Heritage Classic. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290.
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Let's go back to the Boston Pizza fan line, 204-780-1290. Robert's on the road. We assume he's in a vehicle. Robert, go ahead.
That's right. It's me, Robert Marvin Hull. Bobby Hull. I heard you taking calls. Yes, I will like to sign up for the Heritage Classic, boys. I'll tell you what I've been doing. I've been planning this out. I'm going to get the old red pants out. And I think I'm going to spend about 45 minutes skating around. Get the old slap shot back, if you know what I mean. Pull out that Northland stick. Last time I weighed it, it was 9.5 pounds. That's probably why I shot so. Anyway, I put 2 quarters in this machine, and I've got a couple things to say. First of all, my brother Dennis. You seen him lately?
I haven't seen him, no.
Guy needs a hat. I'll tell you. Anyhow, listen, Richie, sit up straight. You look like a walking letter C. Got scoliosis or something. Anyhow, I want to play. Get me on the left wing. Can you do something about that?
Robert, we'll pull some strings for you.
I called you specifically. You got 2 first names. I think that takes balls.
Yeah, well, it took my parents is what it was.
Ricky Ralph, that's my boy.
Robert, good to hear from you tonight.
Okay, call me back.
We'll do. Do we have his number?
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. That, of course, a parody, in case you didn't catch up on that part, of Mr. Bobby Hall calling into Thursday's post-game show. Richie was on air with Rick Ralph, and always good to hear from Robert Marvin when he's able to call into the post-game show.
Well, yeah, you have to understand also that the call before that was somebody who called into the post-game show. We obviously appreciate all the calls, but and he just called in, didn't care really about the game against Detroit, just wanted to talk about the Heritage Classic. So it was followed up by somebody who wanted to play in the Heritage Classic.
By Mr. Mahal, who wanted to play in there on his own. Welcome back. The segment brought to you by Keener Jerseys. Keener Jerseys is known as one of the world's best jersey customizers. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team or have a jersey you want customized, visit Keener Jerseys online at keenerjerseys.com. That segues nicely because I assume we're going to be seeing a retro third jersey debuted by the Winnipeg Jets to honor both the WHA Jets and the Jets 1.0, and I'm sure that'll all be in conjunction with the upcoming Heritage Classic. Your excitement level, the announcement, you know, Ducky, Timu, Gretzky, Curry. I mean, this is the 19, this is our childhood, this is our youth come to reality yet again, you know, just 30 years later or so.
I want to talk more about that call for a second, though. The best part of that call was Richie just losing it, laughing the entire time. That I think we can all agree that was the best, if you want to call it, prank call, parody call that this station has ever got. That was just hilarious. The best part, I was listening to the tail end of that. I caught that live, and my favorite part of that was when he goes, "Richie, sit up straight. You look like a walking letter C." It was great. No, I mean, the excitement level, Drew, on a scale of 1 to 10 in Winnipeg when they made the announcement, it was obviously a 15, right? I mean, especially when Wayne Gretzky and Teemu Selänne agree that they're going to be playing here for the alumni game. And I agree with Richie. I mean, there's almost more excitement for that alumni game. And again, we really appreciate Luciano Borsato coming on. Mm-hmm. Everybody remembers his rookie year, number 38. So it was great to have him on talking about some of the old Jets, Darren Shannon, Chris King. And I mean, the Jets 1.0 is such a big part of Jets 2.0, and the Manitoba Moose were as well. But I mean, especially, you know, if you grew up watching some of these guys, to have the opportunity to watch, whether, you know, it's some of the guys we named, you know, Teppo Numminen or, sure, you know, a Keith Tkachuk, whatever. I mean, it's going to be so exciting. And the game itself will be so exciting because really it's a celebration of hockey, right?
Sure.
It's all of those good things about hockey, nostalgia and the history of the game are such a big part. And for some of the younger kids who maybe didn't see some of these players, I mean, that 92-93 team, I mean, that was arguably one of the best years ever for hockey in Winnipeg, with Timu breaking the rookie goal record with 76 goals. For some of those kids, like, so you're talking, you know, even 10-year-old kids, you know, who don't really know who some of these guys are, Richie, it's kind of educational for them. Their parents can take them to the game and, you know, let them know how good of a rookie Selänne really was. So it's an exciting event, and it's great for not only the city but the province, because it's going to be such a great celebration of hockey in Western Canada, really.
You know, I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to that tie to the past that seems to have evaded the new group so far. You know, the called Winnipeg Jets 2.0.
Mm-hmm.
That tie back to the history of the first go around. And you know, in reality, you know, when you see kind of, for example, the records being broken, it's Atlanta Thrashers record. Those are meaningless. No one cares.
Yeah,
no one cares about the Atlanta Thrashers records. They care about the history of the city and what happened here. And so I think this will be a nice tie, and I think everybody will be extremely excited to come back. And for many people, like our parents' age and when we were kids, when a lot of these guys were in their prime, you're going to be able to kind of relive that experience, and everybody's just going to have a great time with it. So, I mean, there's no downside to this. Certainly, yeah. No downside.
I think your point there about the history, sort of the lack of ties, or, you know, and I'm sure it's been – they're trying to make their own – you know, the 2.0, Jets 2.0 have been trying to make their own sort of get their own footing before, I think, looking back at the 1.0. And some people, I think, rightfully could say that they've waited too long or that maybe they should have embraced it from the start. But I guess better late than never. And I think that this is going to be, with this Heritage Classic, it's going to be the start of them really embracing what has been a tremendous Winnipeg hockey history.
We don't know that. I mean, it could be just a blip or it could be consistent. We'll see. We'll see. And I'm looking forward to it. I mean, regardless, if it is a blip or if it is consistent, at least you're going to have it for a short period of time.
Sure. My hope is that it's not a blip, that it is sort of the start of something on a regular basis where they, you know, maybe begin. And I understand, I get to some extent why you've waited, you know, the 4 or 5 years, but, you know, maybe you get to begin that sort of ring of honor like they're talking about, where people will Winnipeg hockey legends will be honored, you know, at the MTS Center and something like that. And I think it's probably overdue to some extent, but I'll give them a pass if they start it now, you know, better late than never, as I said.
Yeah, and I think the Jets opponent couldn't have been any better. You know, we talk about the history of the Winnipeg Jets 1.0, you know, and that includes the WHA. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the Jets and Oilers come into the NHL the same year, 1979, and, you know, Wayne Gretzky, everybody knows that whole story. And you have Wayne Gretzky, the greatest Oiler of all time, and Timo Solani, in my opinion, the greatest Jet of all time, who are going to play in the alumni game.
Better than Dale Hawerchuk?
Well, again, that's an argument. I mean, you could throw Bobby Hull in there as well,
well
right?
Well, you, I mean, yeah.
So, and he only played 2.5
years. I was talking NHL years, but yeah. Absolutely.
I would say he had the biggest impact in a short period of time.
I would agree with that.
When you look at, especially where the Oilers are now at, guys, and, you know, they're struggling, you know, they're going to get a top 10 pick, maybe a top 5 pick, and the Winnipeg Jets and Edmonton Oilers have always been linked together, you know, both being in Western Canada, but also both teams that are very young right now. And the fact that you're going to see Connor McDavid, arguably the best prospect, you know, since Wayne Gretzky, you know, no offense to Sidney Crosby, guys, but, you know, Connor McDavid might be better than Sidney Crosby, and he's only, you know, getting started right now. But it's just going to be such an amazing event. This is going to be one of the biggest events ever to take place in Winnipeg. I mean, you could throw this up there with the Pan Am Games in 99 and 67. I mean, it's going to be incredible. The entire hockey world was covering this when it was announced. I mean, and
let me ask you that quick. Let me stop you right there. Do you think that this is a story beyond Winnipeg and Edmonton, or do you think that this is something that captures the imagination of the casual hockey fan, be it in Canada or the United States? Because lately, the stadium series games, or for the most part, have been stories in the cities that where the teams are playing in, and that's about it.
Well, think about it. I mean,
when you have 13 every year, people don't get that.
Of course, they've choked the golden goose. Do you think this one's different in that it?
No.
You think this is a story in Winnipeg and Edmonton, and that's pretty
yes.
much it. Yeah.
Well, it's not really an argument about whether it's different. I mean, we're talking about this one specifically, and I think to answer your question, I think it does reach farther than Winnipeg and Edmonton. You don't think people in Finland are going to be watching to see Jari Kurri and Timo Solani in this game? I mean, there's going to be people all across North America and the world watching this. It's going to be a great event. It's a great opportunity for Winnipeg, you know, with people coming into town. Apparently hotels have already been filling up, so it's great news.
Yeah, I mean, I think your point about Finland there is, I think the Finnish ties between the two, because, you know, Kurri and Timo are the two, you know, greatest Finnish hockey players of all time.
Well, Teppo, I mean, there's a lot of Finns.
You know, a guy like Teppo Nieminen in there. So, I mean, I think it is a story, you know, it might not be a story in the United States as much as it is a story probably overseas in Finland, because I don't think those guys have ever really seen Timo Solani and Jari Kurri on the ice at the same time in obviously not a meaningful game, but in a competition.
Yeah, but, you know, for former Winnipeg Jets who live in the U.S., I mean, I ran into Russ Romanek at Earls, Maine, and he was telling me that Keith Tkachuk had already called him to see if he could get tickets for the alumni game. So I think it's still going to impact.
Hang on, Tkachuk's not going to be playing in the alumni game?
Well, he could be.
His son might be playing on the Winnipeg Jets at that point in time.
He was probably more so looking for tickets for his family and stuff like that. But needless to say, I think former players, their families, and fans of those players, I mean, Phil Housley, another guy, right? I mean, it's a huge deal. Needless to say, it's a very big deal. It's going to be very exciting. I mean, I can't wait. And I think there are a lot of hockey fans out there that are really counting down the days until this game happens.
Sure. Start saving your money. I mean, I think it goes to show you how important the alumni game is, that most people, you know, if they weren't selling them as a package, and by the sounds of it, they're selling it, you know, two games for one price.
Yeah, you'd assume so, yeah.
That nobody, you know, more people would be, you know, not that many people would be interested in the outdoor game between the Jets and the Oilers as opposed to the alumni game.
Yeah, the alumni game would probably sell out quicker. They'd both sell out, but you'd sell out quicker, yeah, for sure.
But I think it is going to be a fantastic atmosphere, of course, at IG Field for that you know, Saturday and then Sunday, a celebration of hockey here in Winnipeg and hockey history.
And sorry to interrupt there, Drew. It'll be real warm. I mean, as compared to obviously middle of January. So
Does that take away any of your enjoyment?
No, no, not at all. Are you kidding? Do you want to sit outside in my
house?
I think it's part of the uniqueness of it.
You go to all those Bomber games when it's minus 40?
Increases the enjoyment. Who wants to sit outside when it's minus 40 in January? I think the fact that they announced it in October was a great idea.
And it's going to be very early in the year. I mean, the season will only be, what, about 3 weeks old at that point in time?
I like that, too. I have no issue with that.
So it'll be nice and early, and we'll get to see the players of our history come back. And, True North, I think, deserves credit for getting – they had everything lined up where they had Gretzky on board from the start, ready to roll out. He had his name committed to it. I mean, and, because Gretzky, he never played here, of course, but the indelible mark he left on hockey history here in Winnipeg – for a guy who never actually played for the Winnipeg Jets is significant.
The greatest player of all time, Drew.
I know he's the greatest player of all time, but I mean, he had achievements here, and you got to what he did to the Jets year after year after year, getting point number 2000 when he was a member of the Los Angeles Kings here in Winnipeg. A game the Jets actually won, but that's a separate issue.
Drew, someone on Twitter.
Should we break down that game, Ezzy?
Do you remember it?
Vaguely.
I think it was a 5-2 Jets victory. I remember watching it on ESPN Classic.
How old were you back then, Drew? 35 or?
Yeah, 38.
Did you watch it live on ESPN Classic, Drew?
No, I watched it live at the Winnipeg Arena. I was at that game, but I remember a few years ago I was in the States and it was a random game on ESPN Classic. So, there went my afternoon for the plans.
I wanted to get this in here. Omega Man points out that Keith Tkachuk has to be in the alumni game because he's actually the only Jet 1.0 to also play for the Thrashers.
Oh. That's a fair point.
So it's a good point by our boy Omega Man. So why not A?
I love Twitter handles.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll talk about the Dennis Wiedemann suspension. It's been cut in half. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Today, we got a result from the neutral discipline arbitrator from the National Hockey League, reducing Dennis Wiedemann's suspension to 10 games. This is the first time that this process has been invoked, and we respect the process. However, we hope that the process gets expedited for the next player that goes through this. With regard to the arbitrator's decision, we are grateful that the finding was made that the contact was not made with any intent to injure the official involved. We believe that's the case. We also fully support sanctions against players who make deliberate contact with officials. Our goal is to put this all behind us now. I consider the matter closed. I'll take a few questions, and then I'm not going to comment on it after today.
That is Calgary Flames executive Brian Burke speaking about the NHL, the arbitrator's decision, the neutral party arbitrator deciding to cut Dennis Wiedemann's suspension in half from 20 games to 10 games for abuse of an official. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment brought to you by the Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial teeth and mouth protection. For more information about Linden Market Dental Center, visit lindenmarketdentalcenter.com. So the announcement, it certainly took, the entire process took about 3 years, but they eventually got it done. And when the announcement came down that the suspension was cut in half, which really only means he gets money back. Dennis Wiedemann will get half the money back because he has already missed 19 games.
It's ideal for Calgary.
Sure, because they're tanking, or not tanking, as he apologized, but you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. They don't care if they win or not, but he gets his money back. How surprised were you that this neutral party arbitrator decided that Dennis Wiedemann's suspension was only worthy of 10 games, not 20?
I thought it'd be 20 off the top, Drew, and we talked about that, and I thought it would be upheld. But you hear a lot of chatter the past few weeks, so I have to say that I was less surprised maybe than I would have been a couple of weeks ago if the ruling had come out when maybe you thought it had come out.
Sure.
Just based on all the chat. I read the ruling. I disagreed with some of the points made by the arbitrator, and I disagree with the overall decision. But, I mean, he writes it out in his 18-page decision, and so be it. You can certainly take issue with the fact that this took far too long. There's no reason why it ought to have taken that long. I wonder what would have happened if Calgary was in a playoff race and one of their top four defensemen was unavailable and then reinstated. That would have been I don't think it would have happened, first of all, which is weird. But you look at, and I'll let Ezzy get in here before I talk about some of the specifics in the arbitrator's decision. I think there's small distinctions that he makes that I think you could go either way. And there's a you know, Gary Bettman's rationale. I completely understand it. I understand the arbitrator's rationale as well. I just agree with Gary Bettman.
Things you never heard Richard Paul usually say.
Say that very often. I usually take issue with Gary Bettman a lot of his decisions. Here, I thought his decision was the right one, and I would disagree with the revision to the suspension. But
you know, Drew, and there's a reason why Richie's a lawyer, and I never got into law school. Rich has actually read the entire 18-page decision here, and I've just read the Cliff's Notes.
Sure.
You know, Kevin Allen actually just came out with an article on USA Today with a statement from the NHL Officials Association saying that the NHL OA strongly disagrees with the decision while linesman Don Henderson continues to recover from an injury inflicted by the player that will sideline him for the rest of the season. The message in reducing the suspension that is sent to NHL players as well as athletes all over the world, including children, is that the code of conduct towards officials has changed. Those are very strong words from the Officials Association, and I agree with Richie. I mean, and we should mention the arbitrator's name is James Oldham, and let's be honest here. I mean, regardless if Dennis Wiedemann actually intended to injure the linesman, I don't believe he intended to injure him.
Well, then you agree with the arbitrator.
Well, I think, though, that even if you can't prove it, what he says, Richie, in that is it's hard to prove that he intended to injure. But to me, it's the action, not the consequences, really. Pardon me, the action, I guess what I mean is the actions and not the end result in that the linesman was injured, Drew. I mean, regardless if the linesman was injured, I think he still should have been suspended. And I think the fact that he's still out maybe is even more reason why the suspension should have been upheld. And the suspension was upheld. That's the problem that I had, is that the NHL reviewed this, Richie, and they said 20 games is fair. And then a third-party arbitrator comes in and says, actually, it was too harsh. But Wiedemann had already served 19 games out of the 20 games. That's what bothers me. So he's going to get half of that salary back, even though he didn't play those 9 games.
Sure.
So that's the issue that I have. I think that.
So your issue is with the length of time the entire process took.
It's the length of time, and also the fact that, as Richie said, the fact that he reduced it because you can't prove that he intended to injure. Well, again, I use a horrible example, but an analogy is, you know, if you get in a car accident and you're drinking and driving, I mean, regardless of if someone gets injured, I mean, it's still illegal to drink and drive.
Sure.
And
so
it's
still illegal. Intent follows the bullet.
It's still illegal and heinous to hit a linesman unsuspecting from behind. And so what kind of message does this send to other leagues in the NHL when a guy gets suspended for 20 games, which sends a very strong message, and then you reduce it?
So Category 1, he refers to – Gary Bettman relies on Rule 40, which is physical abuse of officials. Specifically, he leans on Category 1 for an automatic suspension. Any player who deliberately – I'm reading verbatim here. Any player who deliberately strikes an official and causes injury or who deliberately applies physical force in any manner against an official with the intent to injure or who in any manner attempts to injure an official shall be automatically suspended for not less than 20 games. And then it says in brackets here, for the purpose of the rule, intent to injure shall mean any physical force which a player knew or should have known could be reasonably expected to cause injury.
But you're still responsible for your actions. And we said this back in January. He did something very stupid, and he was suspended 20 games. It sent a strong message, and he has to learn his lesson. Now by reducing it, you're kind of saying, it actually wasn't that bad.
Well, I mean,
he doesn't feel like the arbitrator doesn't feel as though the
intent
actions,
was to injure.
The actions fall within that description. He thinks it falls within the next description.
Please go on.
Well, the next description is Category 2. Any player who deliberately applies physical force to an official in any manner, excluding the actions as set out in the previous category, which physical force is applied without intent to injure, or who spits at an official, shall be automatically suspended for not less than 10 games.
Well, if you cross-check somebody, it's
hard. There's also the big issue in the arbitration about whether it was a cross-check or not.
Well, you saw the video. You saw the video. Did anybody think it wasn't a cross-check?
Hit from behind, cross-check or not, I mean.
Yeah, in any event, you nail the linesman from behind. You're nailing him because, you know, there's intent to injure there. I mean, you know, it's not like you're just avoiding him and, you know, trying to give him a love tap. You know, you hit him pretty hard, obviously.
And, Drew, I should qualify that. I actually do think that the fact that Don Henderson hasn't come back and, you know, performed his duties in the NHL, I actually do think that that should have an impact on whether Dennis Wiedemann's appeal was heard or not, or I guess upheld, and it wasn't upheld after the NHL already upheld it. So I think the fact that, you know, did he have the intent to injure or not? How can you prove that? Well, he did injure him. Don Anderson is not in the NHL right now and is sidelined. Okay, well. So he was injured. So to say that, you know, so then you're basically saying it was an accident?
Well, I'll give you the exact, I'll read again verbatim. Now, I was reading before the rules. I'm reading verbatim now the arbitration decision. The league argues, this is when he's writing his decision, the league argues that Weidman's actions were, at the least, actions that Weidman knew or should have known could reasonably expect it to cause injury, which I agree with. I mean, editorial, yeah. I agree with that. And then he says, Commissioner Bettman agreed. Okay, obviously, Commissioner Bettman agreed with Colin Campbell. I'm assuming they probably chatted before that decision was made. That's an assumption, however, and I have no factual knowledge of that. What exactly Weidman should have known, however, is not an easy question to answer. I do not think the parenthetical language should be interpreted as introducing the idealized, reasonable person who occupies such a prominent place in the developed common law. So forget all that legal wording. This is the next comment that is important. I construe the parenthetical as encompassing what the player should have known, taking into account the specific circumstances that occurred. In Weidman's case, this means taking into account his concussed state.
Mm-hmm.
And I do not believe that in his concussed state, Weidman could have or should have anticipated that his push would cause Henderson to fall and bang his head against the board sufficiently hard to put Henderson also in a concussed state. Now, the weird part here, okay, that's your rationale. The weird part here is the footnote. He puts a little footnote at the end of that sentence. And the footnote says at the bottom, it is worth noting that both Weidman and Henderson finished the game without further incident. So are you saying his concussed state only affected that immediate action and didn't affect the rest of the game?
It seems
like that's a weird footnote.
Yeah, well, I mean,
it seems to kind of contradict or play against what he's stating, that he wasn't able to make the decision. Now, he doesn't clarify that in that he thinks, I don't know if there's medical evidence to support it, that in that short period of time, Weidman I think Weidman testified he didn't remember. They both didn't remember the incident.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a whole different issue of why he's playing and all that. But if you point out that he finished the game without incident, was in his decision-making then repaired immediately after a short period of time, how long was it again that he went on for his next shift?
It was very quick.
So yeah, so those are the issues I take with the ruling.
It seems to be just jumping to its own conclusions that may not clearly be there.
Right.
No, I mean, the arbitrator's argument was that Gary Bettman did the same thing.
Sure, and I mean, I understand why Gary Bettman did it, because it's much more important for Gary Bettman to support his officials than it is to support Dennis Weidman in this instance.
And support the disciplinary committee and all
yeah,
that.
Yeah, absolutely. You know. He's got to keep everything calm in his own backyard.
Right, but I think here, even if that was the underlying intention, I think that his decision here was
just.
Yeah, it was just. I thought so.
Yeah.
I think you hear a lot of people that don't think there was any intent. I don't know. I go back to the reaction of the Nashville bench.
Because they went, what the hell's going on?
They had the best view there.
Yeah. I mean,
and they're players, and they know what it's like to be in that position. And so that's what I found very telling.
Right, Richie. And at this point, you know, he's going to come back. He's eligible to come back immediately, right? And
yeah, he played last night.
Mm-hmm. Oh, he did play last night. That's right. Yeah. So at this point, you got to say, okay, this is an incident that everybody regrets happened. And hopefully, not only does Dennis Weidman learn from this, and you know, it makes him a better person and hockey player. Honestly, Drew, it also hopefully prevents something like this from happening, and it makes players have more respect for the officials. I think that most players respect officials.
I don't
sure,
think Dennis Weidman doesn't respect Don Henderson. Yeah. I think the most Dennis Weidman's probably regretting this more than anybody else.
Of course, that we said from the beginning. Admit you made a mistake and move on. It was my opinion. Sure, that wouldn't have. Sure, he's appealed and therefore earned back the 10 games of salary. Exactly how much money it is. So money talks. But I don't think that there's certainly no officials who are going to look at him the same way anymore, based on the way this has played out.
Right. And Dennis Weidman has 1 year left on his contract, and you know it's nice for him that he gets in, you know, an extra 14 games here or whatever. But the reality is Don Henderson, you know, had a serious injury. And that's really, to me, the most troubling aspect of this, that he was cross-checked from behind, and you know he's lost the ability to. I mean, I'm sure he's recovered some of his income, but the point is, I mean, he hasn't had a very enjoyable last couple of months, right? Sure. So again, you gotta hope that Dennis Weidman learns his lesson. I mean, and you know, I've done stupid things in my life. I've hopefully learned my lesson, but you know, I don't. Again, back to the decision to reduce the suspension, I just don't think that sends a good message, especially to minor hockey, when something like that happens and you say, okay, you know, 20 games, that's a quarter of a season, Drew, and then you reduce it, and you're basically saying, he didn't really intend to injure him, so we're going to reduce that by 10 games after he's already served 19 games. That's what the aspect of it that I don't like.
The one other thing I want to know, and it's not relevant to what you're talking about, Ezzie, which I think is more, you know, more important in a big picture, but Calgary likely would have traded him. If somebody, you know, if they could have put all their ducks in a row, and now this suspension inhibited their ability, I think inhibited because people weren't aware of what was going to happen and you know, how Weidman would be affected by it. I actually think Weidman gets moved in the offseason, as an aside, but that's another interesting element of if they traded Russell. Russell didn't have a year left. Weidman does.
Sure.
And there are some no trade restrictions on him, but
you think it prevented a trade at the deadline for a team that was
out
of the playoff picture?
Absolutely.
In any event, before we head to break, a couple of this is why our fans are the best. We talked about Keith Tkachuk, and we mentioned that he was the only player to play for the Winnipeg Jets 1.0 and the Atlanta Thrashers.
Was there another?
There's another two.
Really?
Emerson?
Yes, according to Harold Frieder and Mooser.
Nelson Emerson.
And can you name the second one? I bet you guys can't.
Okay, hold on.
I'll give you the over the break. Let's go to break. We'll come back.
And no cheating.
No cheating. You try and think about who the other guy who played for the Atlanta Thrashers was. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
That was a really quick commercial break, guys. I'm not exactly sure what happened there. I blinked and we're back. Anyways, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com.
Funny tweet from our boy Brian Grebe in San Francisco. He asked, who is the judge in that Dennis Weidman appeal, Judge Ito?
Very good. Attaboy from Brian there in San Francisco. Before the break, and I mean, what did we say before the break? We said no cheating.
No cheating.
No cheating.
Yep.
Ezzie, apparently not an honorable gentleman, has to cheat. Immediately goes to find the answer. Immediately goes. So before the break, we said, you know, Richard had nailed that that Nelson Emerson played for both the Jets, or as he nailed that, before the Jets and the Thrashers.
Yep.
And then the question was, there was one other player. Well, Richard came up with another player who played for both the Jets 1.0 and the Thrashers. Richard came up with Daryl Shannon, who played for both teams. And Rick Tabaracci played one game for the Atlanta Thrashers in 1999.
See, I didn't come up with that one because I guessed Shannon. You said, "Oh no, that's actually who it is." But this is what, keep thinking.
Yeah.
And while I was thinking, Ezzie went on to Twitter, cheated, and then read it out loud.
Yeah. Ruined the entire game for everybody.
You know what, Richie? I'm just getting you back for shushing me during that first commercial break.
While Eric was trying to get some clips ready to go.
Yeah, but that
you're
didn't,
barking in his ear.
That didn't prevent you from telling me. I still don't know where you went for dinner last night.
No, Ezzie.
It's still not relevant. Anyways, moving on. Interesting article, or interesting comments from Elliot Friedman earlier in the week regarding the possibility the NHL is exploring alongside, you know, NHL executives, alongside the NHLPA and all the different developmental leagues, that the NHL is exploring the possibility of raising the draft eligible age to 19. Currently, of course, it is any player who turns 18 by September 15th of the year of the draft, meaning if the draft is, you know, in the draft, of course, in July or at the end of June, and if you turn 18 by that September 15th, you are draft eligible for that year. The NHL is considering raising that up to 19 years old before you're draft eligible, sort of mimicking the age that it is in the NBA, which of course has the 19-year-old rule. You can't go straight from high school into the NBA anymore, that you have the one and done players in college basketball.
Right. Now, the difference is, aside from the NBDL, which was created a few years ago, is that the NHL, they don't go right to the pros the next season.
Not necessarily. They have developmental leagues and everything else. You know, only the best of the best generally make the jump straight from junior or, you know, straight to the NHL. So your thoughts about the possibility of the NHL raising the draft eligible age to 19. Is this a necessary step?
No, I don't think so. I think the NHL is doing its best to allow GMs to this league to be as dummy-proof as possible. They already have the salary cap. They already have the max on contracts. They already have all these ways to save the GMs from themselves. And now they're going to add the 19 because they want another year to value to view the prospect and another year of seasoning and then be able to make a better decision on a player because they'll have more of a sample. What about making the decision now based on the sample that you have? And how many players in the NHL are 18 years old and pretty effective? And if they're not, there are mechanisms in play. There are leagues in place to develop those players. So I don't know why the PA would ever agree to this. I don't understand why the PA would agree to this.
And it's not something that's new either. I mean, I remember Bob Nicholson, Hockey Canada, was talking about this, I believe it was 5 years ago. So this isn't something that's kind of come out of nowhere. But I agree with Richie. I mean, if you're an 18-year-old, like a Connor McDavid, like a Noah Hanifin, like many players before these guys, those are the two most recent ones, you know, coming from the 2015 draft. But if you're able and you're an adult age and you're able to come into the NHL, sign a contract, play with the team that drafted you, I mean, it's hard to say that now we're going to raise that age. Like Austin Matthews has already played a year pro in the Swiss League. Now you're going to raise the draft age to 19. And again, you mentioned this, Drew, but I mean, these talks were in the preliminary stages. They talked about this after the draft in Florida. So it's not like anything is imminent here, but I agree with Rich. I don't see this happening. I think they're going to keep the draft eligible age exactly the same.
And I think, you know, they're scouting these kids from the time they're 14.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how much more time do you need? That's enough time. Now, you want another year? Sure, it gives you a better chance of not making a mistake. Well, you know what? Sometimes you want to see some mistakes. It makes it more interesting. Certain teams are able to get an edge. I mean, you're taking every advantage away. I'm just not in favor of it. It's different than the NFL. Again, there's no developmental league in the NFL. I mean, I guess you said CFL. Different league. It's not like you own the players part of your property and all that stuff.
The developmental league for the NFL is practically, you know, college football.
Exactly.
Yeah, the NCAA.
So you come out and there's that three-year restriction on the NFL. And then NBA now has that 1 year. But the problem with the NBA was that they had so many high school players coming in, forced into the league without a developmental process, that were completely unfit to play at that level, except for the top players like LeBron, Kobe, and Garnett.
Sure.
And there was a lot more misses later on than there were, and Dwight Howard, also another one of those.
Yeah,
so,
Tracy McGrady.
Yeah, how many more restrictions can you put on these guys? I think the system is completely fine the way it is.
You know, I watch a fair bit of college basketball, and I see players that are playing college now. The guys who are playing for the big schools, who are playing for the Kentucky and playing for North Carolina and playing for Duke and playing for Kansas, who don't need that year. I mean, who are the one-and-done guys who play that year in college basketball simply because they have to. And I do believe that, particularly in basketball, at some point soon, I'm surprised it's been about 11 years now since the NBA introduced that age rule, that you haven't seen a lawsuit based on age discrimination. And I don't know why the NHL would want to open up that can of worms. Because, to your point, these guys get drafted, it's not like, you know, they don't have a fallback option to go back to their junior to continue to develop.
And, well, if they get drafted, Drew, they also can play in college unlike the NBA.
That's right. I mean, you know, it just doesn't seem to make any sense to me why this is an issue and why, you know, if everything is negotiation, if it's all, you know, horse trading between the NHL, you know, if the NHL gets this, then the NHLPA is going to get something else. You know, why is this a win for the NHL, aside from your point of, you know, making it easier to be a general manager, you know, preventing them from making more mistakes? I just don't see why the NHL would want this so badly as a win in their column and have to give up something else in return.
Well, does it push back free agency? I mean, you'd assume that PA would not agree to that whatsoever. I mean, does it allow there to be less mistakes? Yeah, it does allow there to be less mistakes, likely. But let the teams do their job and see how well they do their jobs.
Yeah.
I'm not in favor of this at all.
It's just it seems like, you know, in basketball, it was getting to the point maybe where it was necessary because all these kids were coming out of college. A lot of them weren't being drafted. They weren't ready for the NBA. Their, you know, careers ended before they started.
That's right.
The NHL, I mean, how many? If you're draft eligible and you don't get drafted, you can still be drafted the year after.
That's right.
it's not like, you know, your career's over and you don't have options. I mean, the, you know, players get drafted each and every year who are 19 and who are 20. They don't necessarily get drafted when they're 18.
And to your point, I mean, and going back to what we said at the beginning of the segment, the idea here, and this is what Bob Nicholson was saying back in 2010, 2011 with Hockey Canada, it buys them more development time. And their kind of, I guess, give, if there's a give and take, was to allow kind of exceptional player rule.
Here we go again with that.
But, I mean, again, this really just benefits junior hockey teams, right?
Not the other factor is we haven't talked about that. You're absolutely right.
That's what really happens here. It benefits junior hockey teams who now have these 18-year-olds guaranteed on their teams. So now if you have, you know, for example, a Jacob Chychrun, who's going to be probably drafted in the top 10 defenseman for Sarnia. You know, Austin Matthews I couldn't use because he was playing in Switzerland. But for example, you know, Chychrun, then you know that you're going to have him. He's not going to be drafted till he's 19. So that increases, that makes your team better. You sell more tickets. There's more eyes on your team and all that, right? So that's a factor there. We already know that you can't play in the AHL if you're under 20, right? I mean, you can play in the playoffs like Josh Morrissey, but Josh Morrissey wasn't able to play the year after he was drafted, right? He had to play in the OHL only in the AHL playoffs. So I think this benefits WHL. This mainly benefits the junior team owners. But again, I agree.
And they're making enough money.
I mean, how many 18-year-olds are there in the NHL this year? Maybe a dozen?
Well, I mean,
less than a dozen,
I would say.
Maybe half a dozen to 10. I mean,
were all the top five picks last year, are they all playing in the NHL this year? I'm just trying to go off the top of my head. I mean, Eichel, McDavid, Hanifin.
Well, Dylan Strome isn't.
Yeah, Dylan Strome isn't. So, yeah, I mean, there's not a ton
Mitch Marner isn't.
Yeah, there's not a ton of 18-year-olds playing, you know, in the NHL. I mean, Daniel Sprong and the Penguins. But, I mean, if a team decides to keep a player up, and that's their own fault for ruining their development. I don't know why. I mean, the player gets paid, so it's not like he's, you know, it's costing him money. The only, I mean, it's typical, of course, that the only time, the only people who are getting hurt by this proposed rule are the players themselves, who are, again, you know, if you're a 19-year-old and you have to play another year in junior, I mean, you're not under contract. You're getting paid nothing when you could be getting paid hundreds of thousands of dollars, well, if not more, playing in the NHL.
We've talked about, that's true. We've talked about the fact that these guys are in these kids are playing hockey all year round from the time they're like six.
Sure.
So are they going to be ready earlier rather than later?
Yeah, what's another year of development for somebody like that? I mean,
and that's the whole point. And Nikolai Lehler says, well, I'm not playing in the QMJHL.
Yeah, so I'm going to go.
So I'm going to go to Europe because I can't develop. And now you're going to say, oh, so there's another year. Now, it doesn't mean he couldn't go there, but.
And I can make money. I mean, there's. Right. I mean, the reason. I mean, Austin Matthews said, "You know what? I accept that I can't play in the NHL this year. You know, it's fine, but I'm not going to work for nothing. I'm going to go play in Europe and Switzerland, and I'm going to make a good deal amount of money. I mean, I don't know what he's making, but I'm sure he's making.
He made some good cash. When
I'm
he was
sure
over there.
He's making six figures and probably I don't know. Let's say you're making
eating
a quarter
that Swiss
of a
cheese,
dollars.
Drew. That Swiss chocolate.
Yeah, you know, I don't blame him. Why would you play for, you know, a junior team or you know, and not make any significant money when you can go to play professionally? It doesn't cost you anything in terms of your development.
Right, and his season just ended, Mark Crawford was let go, unfortunately, and there's a good chance that he plays for the U.S. at the World Championships.
Sure.
And by all accounts, Austin Matthews was excellent, lights out in Switzerland this year. So it's a good point, Drew. I just think that, you know, it's one of those situations, again, if it ain't broke, don't fix it, right? And right now, I think, you know, with Connor McDavid coming in as an 18-year-old, Austin Matthews next year, I mean, Nolan Patrick in 2017, I mean, I don't know if there's a real reason to change something, especially if it doesn't truly benefit the players, right?
I agree with you there, Ezzy. Before we head to break, more people chiming in on Twitter on former Winnipeg Jets 1.0 players who also played for the Thrashers.
All right.
Keep them coming. Corey Tokar reminds us that Mike Stapleton played for both the Jets and for the Thrashers.
That's five.
Is that up? Are we up to five there?
Yep.
Yeah, that would be five. So keep them coming. Add a legal curve. Really, you guys are doing the work for us today. We appreciate it.
No made-up players, though.
Yeah, we'll catch on if they're made up. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.